Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the TR90 Body Burn 30 support call. This call happens Monday through Friday at this time, which for me is 6:40 Pacific time, 7:40 Mountain time, 8:40 Central time, and 9:40 Eastern time. Thrilled to have you along with us. If you ever miss these calls, you can pick them up on an application called SoundCloud or wherever you get your podcast by putting in Frank, F-R-A-N-K, Lomas, L-O-M-A-S, and TR90, or Frank Lomas and Solutions, the digit for anti-aging. These calls are archived back 14, 15 years worth of archives, so there's a wealth of information in these calls. I'm Susan Mann out of Portland, Oregon, welcoming you to the call. And I come to you with an education background, but a huge interest in health, nutrition, and exercise dating back, I want to say, at least four decades, because when I was in high school, my grandparents had hereditary heart disease and adult onset diabetes, and I didn't want to have those challenges going forward. So I've done many things to help prevent that over the years. I came into the TR90 program when it first started from its immediate predecessor, which was the R90. And while R90 worked well, it didn't work nearly as well as the TR90 did for me. With the combination of the supplements, the nutrition plan, the exercise as a complete package, it really made a huge difference in my life. I was able to drop 20 body inches in about 6 months, even though I did not lose a single ounce. So if you're looking at scales and thinking they're regular bathroom scales and thinking they're going to tell you the whole story, they do not. I was making sure I was taking my photos and measurements at least once a month, checking to see how those clothes were fitting because, as I said, I lost 20 body inches, which meant I went down several dress sizes since muscle is more compact than body fat is. And so there we are. When you're first starting out with that TR90 program, it's your one lean meal a day, two shakes a day, three snacks a day, 30 grams of protein at least three of those meals. Taking your supplements 15 to 20 minutes before a meal is best. If you're not able to do that, and I would say about 40% of the time I was not, I ended up taking them with my meals. So my results, that's my results. Your results may vary. 7+ servings of fruits and vegetables every single day. That will give you macronutrients, micronutrients, and fiber. Your macronutrients are your proteins, your carbs, your sugars, your fats. Your micronutrients are your vitamins and minerals. And fiber, well, that helps in two ways. One of which is satiety, or that feeling of fullness. The other is for good digestive health. For that, guys need about 45 grams of fiber daily. And ladies, we need about 32 grams of fiber daily for that good digestive health. And if you're getting all that fiber, well, you want to get up and get moving. Well, 30 minutes moderate to heavy exercise at least 5 days a week. You can definitely do more than that. And at one point, I was doing about 3.5 to 4 hours of exercise a week. But don't do less. That 30 minutes, 5 days a week is really a critical part of the lifestyle change. And if you're working out really heavily, you can be losing up to a quart of body moisture in an hour. So your next thought is hydration. Well, that hydration baseline starts out at 1 ounce of water for every 2 pounds you weigh. So if you weigh 100 pounds, start out at 50 ounces of water and build it up from there. If you're in a if it's humid out or if you're perspiring heavily, then you'll need to increase your fluid intake to offset that. But that exercise, you can do it in a 30-minute chunk, two 15-minute chunks, three 10-minute chunks, whatever suits your lifestyle, whatever gets you up and moving and excited to move, it's all good. And the last thing I recommend is 7 to 9 hours of good quality sleep a night. And the reason I recommend that is because I have found in all of the studies and readings I've done over many years that sleep is critical. Your body does what I like to call a series of system resets while you are sleeping, clearing out toxins, storing memories, restoring muscles and tissues. There's just various things going on during various stages of sleep, so it's really critical that you get that good quality sleep. Today's information is coming from a book called Brain Rules, 12 Principles for Surviving, Thriving at Work, Home, and School. It was written by John Medina. We are in rule number 12, which is called Exploration, which really gets your brain going, and so we're going to jump right into it. So, I remember when I was 3 years old obtaining sudden interest in dinosaurs. I had no idea that my mother had been waiting for it. That very day, the house began its transformation into all things Jurassic and Triassic and Cretaceous. Pictures of dinosaurs would go up on the walls. I would begin to find books about dinosaurs strewn on the floor and sofas. Mom would even couch dinner as dinosaur food, and we would spend hours laughing our heads off trying to make dinosaur sounds. And then suddenly, I would lose interest in dinosaurs because some friend at school acquired an interest in spaceships, rockets, and galaxies. Extraordinarily, my mother was waiting. Just as quickly as my whim changed, the house would begin its transformation from big dinosaurs to the Big Bang. The reptilian posters came down, and in their places, planets would begin to hang from the walls, and I would find little pictures of satellites in the bathroom. Mom even got space coins from bags of potato chips, and I eventually gathered all of them into a collector's book. This happened over and over again in my childhood. I got an interest in Greek mythology. She transformed the house into Mount Olympus. My interest careened into geometry, and the house became Euclidean, then Cubist, rocks, airplanes, and by the time I was 8 or 9, I was creating my own house transformations. One day, around age 14, I declared to my mother that I was an atheist. She was a devoutly religious person, and I thought this announcement would crush her. Instead, she said something like, "That's nice, dear," as if I had just declared that I no longer liked nachos. The next day, she sat me down by the kitchen table, a wrap package in her lap. She said calmly, "So I hear you are now an atheist. Is that true?" I nodded yes, and she smiled. She placed the package in my hands. "The man's name is Friedrich Nietzsche, and the book is called Twilight of the Idol," she said. "If you are going to be an atheist, be the best one out there. Bon appetit." I was stunned, but I understood a powerful message. Curiosity itself was the most important thing, and what I was interested in mattered. I had never been able to turn off this fire hose of curiosity. Most developmental psychologists believe that a child's need to know is a drive as pure as a diamond and as distracting as chocolate, even though there is no agreed-upon definition of curiosity in cognitive neuroscience. I couldn't agree more. I firmly believe that if children are allowed to remain curious, they will continue to deploy their natural tendencies to discover, explore, until they are 101. This is something my mother seemed to know instinctively. For little ones, discovery brings joy. Like the addictive drug, exploration creates the need for more discovery so that more joy can be experienced. It is a straight-up reward system that, if allowed to flourish, will continue into the school years. As children get older, they find that learning not only brings them joy, but it also brings them mastery. Expertise in specific subjects breeds the confidence to take intellectual risks. If these kids don't end up in the emergency room, they may end up with the Nobel Prize. I believe it is possible to break this cycle, anesthetizing both the process and the child. By first grade, for example, children learn that education means an A. they begin to understand that they can acquire knowledge, not because it is interesting, but because it can get them something. Fascination can become secondary to what do I need to know to get the grade. But I also believe the curiosity instinct is so powerful that some people overcome society's message to go to sleep intellectually, and they flourish anyway. My grandfather was one of those people. He was born in 1892 and lived to be 101 years old. He spoke 8 languages and went through several fortunes and remained in his own house, mowing his own lawn, until the age of 100. Lively as a firecracker at the end, at a party celebrating his centenary, he took me aside. "You know, Juanito," he said, clearing his throat, 66 years separate the Wright brothers' airplane from Neil Armstrong and the moon." He shook his head, marveling. "I was born with the horse and buggy, and I die with the space shuttle. What kind of thing is that?" His eyes twinkled. "I lived the good life." He died a year later. I think of him a lot when I think of exploration. I think of my mother and her magically transforming rooms. I think of my youngest son experimenting with his tongue and my oldest son's overwhelming urge to take on a bee sting. And I think that we must do a better job of encouraging lifelong curiosity in our workplaces and especially in our schools. Google takes to heart the power of exploration. For 20% of their time, employees may go where their mind asks them to go. The proof is in the bottom line. Fully 50% of the new products, including Gmail and Google News, came from the 20% time. How would we implement such freedom in our classrooms? Some people have tried to harness our natural exploration tendencies by using the problem-based or discovery-based learning models. These models have both strong advocates and strong detractors. Most agree that these debates are missing hard-nosed empirical results that show long-term effects of these styles. I would go further and argue that what is missing is a real live laboratory in which the brain scientists and education scientists could carry out investigations on a routine long-term basis. I would like to describe the place for such research. In the early 20th century, John Dewey created a laboratory school at the University of Chicago, in part because he thought that learning should be tested in a real-world situation. Those such schools fell out of favor in the mid-1960s, perhaps with good reason. A 21st century version might look to one of the most successful educational models out there, a medical school. As William H. Payne, a colleague of Dewey's, said, psychology, in fact, stands in the same relation to teaching that anatomy does to medicine. It still does, though I would replace psychology with brain science. The best medical school model has 3 components: a teaching hospital, a faculty who work in the field as well as teach, and research laboratories. It is a surprisingly successful way of treating people. It is also a surprisingly successful way to transfer complex information from one brain to another. I often have watched bright non-science members become accepted into the medical school program and then, within 4 years, transform into gifted healers and terrific scientists. Why do you get good health and good training at the same time? I'm convinced that it is the structure. And we'll be getting into a little more of that structure on Friday. We have Frank back up tomorrow at the top of the hour. If you scoot over to Facebook, One Team Global Live, one of our leaders will be sharing some information on Nu Skin, the company, and what's going on. This is Susan Mann for November 6th, 2024, signing out. I welcome any thoughts or comments you may have. If you're willing to share them out loud, and if you're not, you can always send me a text to 503-502-4863, and I would be delighted to add you to our band. You're welcome to share the podcast with others, encourage others to come join us, go out and make it great, and I welcome your comments. So there we have it, my friend. Hopefully you found that of interest. And if there's no other thoughts or comments, I'm going to go ahead and release us. You have, make it great. We'll have Frank tomorrow, and I'll be back on Friday.